This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Alan Ellis here. This is the Outdoorsman Radio Show. We are pre-recorded this morning for a broadcast on this first Saturday of the early muzzleloader season, the only Saturday of the early muzzleloader season. The three-day season started Thursday through today. And it's antlered or antlerless, your choice. Most people are using this opportunity to take a nice buck, or maybe even fill the freezer, maybe get their, maybe get one of their does for their bonus deer tag. But it's a great opportunity to get out in the woods. Beautiful weather out there. We're pre-recording this show on Tuesday, the 17th, and on Monday, the 16th, Alan was in the deer stand for the first time since, goodness gracious, since the first day of archery season. So I didn't mean to refer to myself in third person there, but I did. And Robin's not with me today. We're, like I said, pre-recording. She's got other things to do this Tuesday. So anyway, you're listening to me on Saturday the 21st, and I hope you're getting ready to head into the woods here shortly, and hope all the kids are out there enjoying themselves. I hope you've got your muzzleloader sighted in, and you know you're safe out there this morning. You're wearing your orange hat, your orange vest, and making sure you can be seen. Anyway, I was in a deer stand on Monday night, this past Monday night, and I'll tell you what. I was in my stand, or in a stand, on some property in Dorchester County, and one of my favorite places to be in the world is in the Sycamore Marsh. And it was an interesting day. Got there, oh, I don't know, 2:30 in the afternoon, something like that. Didn't get in the stand until about quarter after 3. Made sure everything was safe and secure. And I'm in a box stand on a chair. With a nice sliding window in the stand, and the feeder's at 15 yards. Weren't sure that the feeder was going to go off. The digital display was a little jacked up, and so one of our buddies went out and checked it earlier in the day and said, yeah, I think it's set for 6-ish. I don't know when it's going off, but we can't really see the display that well. So he took some corn and, you know, spread it on the platform. It's very interesting. We have 10 by 10 platforms down there that sit under all the feeders. The feeders are all sitting in water. There's, you know, it's just the way it is. That's where the feeders are. And when it gets wet, when the tide comes in, when it rains, which it did yesterday morning, it's wet around the feeders. Of course, they don't, you know, the sika deer don't mind that because their feet are wet 90% of the time anyway. So, sitting there, 3:30, 4 o'clock, I look up and there's something on the feeder, and what is that? I couldn't tell what it was. I got the binoculars. This is the feeder at 80 yards. There's one at 15. So at 80 yards, I'm looking at it through the binoculars, and it's a big raccoon. I mean, a big raccoon. And he climbs up on the pole of the feeder, and he reaches over and he grabs a spinner, and he's up there going around and around and around on his, you know, he's hanging on with his front feet, reaching in and spinning the spinner and getting the corn out. And it's, of course, falling down on the platform. And he's up there for, I don't know, 20 minutes. I thought, well, that's crazy. So I watched him, and he dropped back down on the platform, and he ate some corn, and he went away. And about, I don't know, 20 minutes later, I looked, and here comes another raccoon. And he comes out, and he's eating the corn that was his buddy had dropped on the stand, and then he's up playing in the water there, and he's washing his paws, and he's doing whatever he's doing, and spent a lot of time in the water there. And I thought, I wonder what's going on with that. So I thought it might have been the same one, but it didn't look like the same one. So anyway, I kind of ignored that. Then I looked down, and sure enough, right there on the platform next to me at 15 yards is a little sycamore doe. And she came out of the woods to my left and, you know, out of the marsh to my left. And she walked over and she jumped up on the platform. And she was in no danger. She was too small to get shot. So she was there for another, I don't know, 20 minutes or so, something like that. So it's starting to get a little, you know, a little interesting. And it's, let's say, I don't know, 5:30, 6 o'clock. Let's say 6 o'clock. Sun's going down, starting to go down, but it's right in my face. It's right in my eyes when I look up at the far feeder. And it's hard to see. There are two raccoons now. You know, the climber and his buddy were still messing around up there. They came back out, and they're messing around on the feeder. And I looked up, and there were too many legs on the platform to be just the feeder. But I'm looking directly into the sun, so, you know, get the binoculars up, and sure enough, there's a stag and a hind, a doe on the feeder, and he's got his head up in the feeder. He's got his nose right up in there on the little spinner, and I'm trying to see what kind of antlers this thing has. And I recognized this stag. He was a smaller stag last year. This year he's pretty good size. He's grown up a little bit over the year. And he's only got little antlers about, I don't know, 2.5 inches long or something like that. And then a little tiny brow tine about 1/2 inch or 3/4 inch. So he's got the weirdest little set of horns you've ever want to see. And I saw him last year and it was just a little bit smaller version of the same thing, but his antlers go straight back over his head, like tight to his head, and then these little tiny brow tines bump up, you know, a little bit. So he's kind of weird looking. So I'm thinking this deer needs taken out because these genetics for antler growth are not that good. But he's at 80 yards, and I've got the crossbow. So I'm watching and waiting, and I look to my left again, and another little hind had come out, and she jumped up. She's on the platform. She's been there now. She's been there 10, 15 minutes. So, these deer are not that much afraid unless you make a sudden movement or make a noise or something like that. So, I'm watching, and I'm just very quiet, very just calm, standing, watching. You know, I don't even have the bow in my hand because, you know, I'm not taking that shot. A great big hind, maybe. You know, big mature hind, yeah, I'd take that shot probably. But anyway, I wanted to see what happened. So now I start to hear one bugling. And, he's bugling to the south. And the stag on the feeder's to the west. And the one right beside me is right beside me. So 6:34, the feeder goes off. We're 10 minutes past sunset. And, we got 20 minutes left to go or 15 minutes left to go, something like that, of legal shooting time. So the feeder goes off a little late. Well, I see the deer look up when he hears the feeder go off. It's 80 yards. The stag jumps off the platform, and I figure he's coming because this is what they do. They travel between feeder to feeder to feeder to feeder. So he jumps off the platform, and I figure, okay, he's coming through the woods. Sure enough, I look at him, and there he is. He's right on the platform. He's waiting for whatever's going to happen. And, he gets off the platform, and he's in the water now. He's in front of me. And he's at 12 yards, broadside, standing perfectly still, plenty of light. And I didn't take the shot. I just couldn't decide whether I wanted to burn my archery tag on a guy with those little tiny horns. Antlers. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. Probably did need to be called, but maybe there's potential there. Maybe he'll be a giant someday. Maybe he's just young. Maybe he's just a slow grower. Maybe he has some damage. I don't know. It's possible. I think that's probably the scenario. But I passed up a big, big bodied sick of deer just because I could. And you know what? I felt good about it. I felt good with myself. I felt good with my decision. I'm not second-guessing or anything like that. So we'll be back down there. Now, like I said, this is Tuesday. We'll be back down there Friday with Jacob all day and Saturday morning as well. Today, we'll be there in the stand. And you never know. You never know what's going to happen. So I'm all excited. I'm going to be hunting whitetails on Thursday in my favorite stand in Cecil County, and I'm going to be hunting sick of deer on Friday and Saturday, and I'm a happy camper when it comes to muzzleloader season. I love my muzzleloader season, and I'm taking my CVA muzzleloader with me. I've got two CVA mountain rifles. I just purchased another one because I like the first one so well, and I can never get to use it during the deer season when Jacob is with me because he always absconds my mountain rifle and leaves me with something else. So now he's got the mountain rifle that he can use, and I've got one that I can use. You got to put good optics on them. You got to put nice optics on them if you want to, you know, hunt to the fullest extent of the daylight hours. You got to put a good scope with good light gathering capabilities on them, and I've got the Leupold fire dot on the one I'm using, which is the little illuminated dot in the center of the, in the center of the crosshairs. It's a spectacular scope. And I got it at Clyde Sports Shop, just one of our sponsors, just so you know. So anyway, we'll be in the stand this morning while you're listening to the show. And speaking of CVA muzzleloaders, we are giving one away. We'll tell Chris ahead of time. We'll tell Chris ahead of time that we're going to be asking you to call in, name and phone number. Don't have to go on the air today because the show's pre-recorded, so you get a free week to call in and leave your name and number for Chris and get in the muzzleloader contest. At the end of the month, we put everybody's name in a hat, and we pull a name, and somebody will win a beautiful CVA muzzleloader from the fine folks at CVA. CVA.com is where to look for all your choices for muzzleloaders, and you can cruise through there and go to your local dealer and pick one out. I think you might even be able to order a muzzleloader directly from them online if you want. So that's the story there. We're really, really excited to have CVA back as a sponsor again this year, and I'm proud to promote them and give their muzzleloaders away to our listeners. So it's all good. It is all good when it comes to muzzleloader season. Okay, we went through the early duck season. It's ongoing. I haven't heard many reports of opening day. The weather's been a little sketchy, but now it's, boy, I'll tell you, this morning, past Tuesday when I recorded the show, it was 46 or 47 degrees. Perfect. I would love to have been in the deer stand on that day, but, you know, here I am talking to you folks. So I hope you're not tired of hearing my voice already, but you know, we're just kind of filling in the gaps here this morning. We might have a guest or two later on. We'll see if anybody shows up or calls in. We never know around here. John Vincent, our producer this morning, he's sitting over there chuckling and having a good time. And so that's how it is. So anyway, why don't we talk about one of the sponsors that's bringing you this show today, and that's Chesapeake Outdoors. Now, look, they're open now. You guys can stop in on your way to your duck blind or on your way to your deer stand. Make sure you got everything you need, all the last-minute stuff, you know, that you might have forgotten, left at home. First choice for Eastern Shore hunters and anglers is Chesapeake Outdoors. They're located at they're on Route 50 at Exit 39B, Dominion Road. That's right there on Kent Island. It's not far across the bridge, that's for sure. For you bow hunters, they've got the Matthews Solo Cam Bows. That's their big compound bow line. And they have the crossbows from Barnett, Mission, 10-point, Excalibur, Carbon Express, even Raven crossbows, the new R-A-V-I-N, Raven. You need to check that one out. Of course, they've got all the arrows, all the accessories, and they got the deer scent. They've got the apple cracker supplement that's manufactured right here in Maryland for you deer hunters that want to add a little extra to your corn. It's great stuff. They've been selling out of it. It's good stuff. Firearms by Remington, Choppa, Escort. Muzzleloaders by CVA. Yep, CVA muzzleloaders and a large selection of accessories. And if you forgot something, you can stop right there and get it. Thompson Center as well, a big line of Yeti coolers and all the Yeti accessories, Bandit and Under Armour clothing. You get the idea. Everything for hunting, everything for fishing can be found at Chesapeake Outdoors. 39B Dominion Road on Kent Island, Route 50. 410-604-2500, 410-604-2500 for Chesapeake Outdoors. Now, another one of our sponsors that I mentioned earlier is Clyde Sports Shop. And Clyde's, he's good to go with muzzleloader season two. He's got a lot of supplies and things like that. They've got the new Bear X crossbows. The Bear X crossbows. You might want to check that out. And, of course, they're your full-line Browning dealer. You know, waterfowl season is going to be around right around the corner, and they carry the A5, the most reliable, fastest cycling, best balance, and softest shooting recoil-operated autoloader on the planet. 100,000-round or five-year guarantee. You want to check out the A5. And then there's always, for the pump shotgun guy, the BPS pump. Comes in 410, 28, 20, 16, 12, and 10-gauge models. Even have a 12- and 20-gauge rifled barrel deer models. That's the BPS pump. Features bottom ejection, so you're not slapping the guy in the head next to you when you're in the duck blind or the goose pit. That's for sure. They're your full-line Browning dealer, and all the Browning rifles, too. The AB3, the X-Bolt, and more. All at Clyde's, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road, Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. That phone number, 410-242-6108, 242-6108 for Clyde's Sports Shop. Crab and seafood lovers, are you ready for some good times? The Spurry family has been in the seafood business on the Eastern Shore for over 35 years, specializing in local Maryland crabs and oysters, and they own the famous Chesapeake Landing Restaurant in St. Michael's. They're now bringing the best of the Eastern Shore across the bridge to Baltimore. Good Times Crab House, located at 8001 Liberty Road, just 1 minute off Beltway Exit 18, headed west, is now open to serve you the freshest Maryland crabs, local oysters, fresh-picked crab meat, Gulf shrimp, a variety of fresh fish, and Alaskan snow crab legs. And Good Times Crab House and Crab Feast Catering specializes in on-site crab feast catering for your large events. Look for Good Times on Facebook for daily specials and weekend deals. Call 443-657-7187 for Good Times and good crabs and seafood. It's Good Times Crab House. Call 443-657-7187. Bay Country Bakery in Cambridge serves not only a great breakfast from 6 to 11 a.m. Monday through Friday and all day Saturday, but has some of the most delicious fresh-baked donuts, pastries, cookies, and breads on the Eastern Shore. I don't go through the fast food drive-thru when I'm on Route 50 heading to the deer stand or the duck blind. I'm patient, but my mouth and my belly can't wait to stop at Bay Country Bakery for a donut or two and a fresh cup of Rise Up coffee. I just look for the big donut on the side of the bakery, and from 11 to 2, you can grab a tasty lunch, too. Dave and Gina Levy, your hosts, are trained chefs and strive to bring you the best. Bay Country Bakery is located at 2951 Coastal Highway, just through Cambridge on Route 50 East. Think Big Donut, or call 410-228-9111. Visit their website or like their Facebook page, Bay Country Bakery, and be sure to stop by and say hello. Maybe you'll see me and Robin there. Alan Ellis here for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie Spray-On Bedliners. Linex Spray-On Bedliners rated number one, carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, your crabbing and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex Premium Bedliner or the Linex Extra. Both look great. And Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck, step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards. You get it. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex Spray-On Bedliner, truck gear, and accessories. Catonsville Linex, new location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill, just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford. 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Linex. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you.
W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg has taken care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything, their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Leaves are turning, there's a chill in the air. Campfires are burning, we're gathered round in chairs.
Okay, well, we're back. We want to thank our producer for doing this pre-recorded show, John Vinson, and we want to thank our producer in studio, Chris Klaproth, today for taking your phone calls. Even in my absence, we're going to sign people up for the muzzleloader contest. All you got to do is call in, leave your name and number. And, you know, we're not going to call you back unless you win a muzzleloader, but, you know, maybe next week you want to call in and say, hey, I entered last week, I just wanted to say hi. So maybe you'll stick to the rules like we should is, you know, it's call in, leave your name and number, go on the air. That's all you have to do to qualify. And you can also enter by email, ellis@ellisoutdoors.com. I want to talk to you about something very serious. Now, last Saturday, 14th, one of the directors of the Maryland Hunting Coalition, his name is Dale Gertz, he called in the radio show and he said, look, the Maryland Hunting Coalition is the only voice for the hunting community in Annapolis. And Dale has been involved with the coalition since the beginning, since its inception. As a matter of fact, he helped fund the first, I don't know, month or so of the coalition in its existence since 2014. Dale has been very active and very outspoken on certain issues, and he's very supportive. So here's what the deal was with Dale. He said, if the Maryland Hunting Coalition can raise up to $5,000 in 2 weeks, I will match it. And now Dale, you know, quite frankly, is able to do that. Dale is a home builder in Southern Maryland with Quality Built Homes. And if you're looking for a nice house in Southern Maryland, I got to tell you, they've got them. Dale is a hunter around the world. He's taken two sheep this year. He's a bear hunter. He's a deer hunter. He's just a good individual. And I hunt with Dale from time to time. And you might have seen Dale on TV. He took an African lion with his bow that wound up charging him and Bob Folkrod. If you saw that adventure, they were with I'm not sure the name of the outfitter in Africa, but they filmed it for Winchester TV, and Dale took this big male lion with a bow and wound up charging him. It was pretty exciting, that's for sure. But anyway, Dale said, I will match contributions up to $5,000, but you have 2 weeks to raise the money. Well, I'm here to report that in the first several days, we've gotten about $600 or $700 in through the website. We sent a newsletter out through the website on the various raffle tickets that we have on there. The beautiful Browning BPS engraved Ducks Unlimited shotgun. It's a $2,000 shotgun. We've got that on. We're raffling off. We've got a Thanksgiving raffle. We're giving away a PSE compound bow and a Ruger, beautifully engraved Ruger 1022, and then a Parker crossbow on that Thanksgiving raffle. Those tickets are $10. So we encourage you to look at our Facebook page, Maryland Hunting Coalition, MD Hunting Coalition, or visit the website, mdhuntingcoalition.org. And for anybody that would like to send a check to help us meet our budget, that's all this is to meet our budget through the end of the year. is to Post Office Box 451, and that's Sykesville, Maryland, Maryland Hunting Coalition, P.O. Box 451, Sykesville, Maryland, 21784. It's Eldersburg, basically, 21784. So if you could help us out, we'd appreciate it. $10 is great. If we get you and 10 of your buddies to send us $10, that'll be great. And then that turns into 20 when it's matched by Director Gertz. So we're very happy to have his support. And we are, you know, hoping for a good match here by the end of next week. So that would be perfect. What now? Why does the Maryland Hunting Coalition need money? That's a good question. Okay. We have a contract, a year-round contract with our advocate, our lobbyist in Annapolis, and he works year-round. He sent letters out this week to the top officials in the DNR. He works with the Maryland Legislative Sportsman's Caucus, the lawmakers, on a year-round basis. He's actively and intimately involved, and he knows everybody. He's been in Annapolis 41 years. That's one reason. Number two, the money that we've had to spend to support the lawmakers that support the hunting community. These are key lawmakers. These are people who chair committees that hear the bills that affect hunters. These are people on those committees. These are people that have leadership roles, and we have to support them. Now, the coalition is allowed to do that. We're allowed to lobby, and we're allowed to support political campaigns. Why? Because we're a 501c4 corporation, and that's what we were set up to do and how we were set up to do it. And look, we don't play favorites. We don't play favorites on either side of the aisle. R's and D's both get support. Their positions are what is important. The positions of leadership and those people on those committees that can make key decisions that can help us. Those people, those lawmakers that'll sponsor bills and so forth. We support them as well. So that's where the money went. We had a tremendous amount of political support we had to spread out this year because a lot of these folks are up for re-election in 2018, and I'm sure that'll continue. So the contract and the political contributions is where our money goes. And, of course, we have to every now and then buy something to help our fundraising efforts. And, you know, we've had to put money out for a deposit on our 2018 fundraiser already this year, which is in Westminster. It's at Martin's in Westminster on March 31st. And, you know, those are the kind of expenses that we deal with. We have about a budget of about $80,000 a year. And, quite frankly, we're falling a little short this year. And that's why we need your help. Very simple. Not trying to, you know, tell you have to join something or anything else. It's all voluntary contributions. That's the way we've always worked in the Maryland Hunting Coalition. It's free to join. We encourage you to join. Some of our listeners have joined over the past couple of weeks, and we're glad to hear it. We're glad to see them helping us out, and we would definitely need some more support on that. But we want to hit that goal. And we did it 2 years ago. We did it 2 years ago in February. And or maybe it was 2016. Yeah, it was 2016 in February. We did it. We were able to match the contribution of Director Gertz, and it was all good. So if you're listening and you're a hunter and, you know, you're tired of having things done to you rather than done for you, well, the Maryland Hunting Coalition is the one. Go online, MD Hunting Coalition. We're very transparent. We've got, I'll tell you what we're dealing with right now. The summary of our Maryland Hunting Summit on September 24th is online. You'll see everything that was discussed. Deer management is number one right now. And taking a look at the DMPs, the deer management permits, the crop damage permits, and some of the uses and abuses of crop damage permits, and what's happening on there. And now the administration has come out to further help the Farm Bureau. At least that's what the Farm Bureau says in their latest news release. And it ain't pretty. So just, you know, keep an eye on the Facebook page. It's MD Hunting Coalition. Or watch the website, mdhuntingcoalition.org, and we will keep you up to date on everything we're doing. We're involved in Sunday hunting. in advancing that. We're involved in the taking a look at these DMPs. We're trying to get more funding for DNR and for the Natural Resources Police. We've been doing that. We talked to you about the helicopter at length a while back. So, you know, there's a lot of things we're involved with and a lot of things we can tell you about. There's some things we can't because of the political nature of the way things are done. We work, you know, behind the scenes. We have meetings that we can't tell you about because of the confidentiality of the topics discussed. And that's the way it works, and we don't reveal that kind of stuff. So, what has the coalition done? For waterfowl hunters, the repeal of the strict liability doctrine, that was one. That was our first year, 2015. Second year was the Poaching Restitution Act, where we had the lawmakers agree that the penalties for poaching a deer, killing a deer illegally here in Maryland, were too light. And we imposed, the bill imposed mandatory penalties for killing a deer illegally. If you're hearing this for the first time, if you kill a whitetail or a sika deer, and the buck is under 150 Boone and Crockett inches, you're going to pay $2,000 to $5,000 on that penalty if you're convicted of killing a deer illegally. On whitetail does, this was an amendment, not our idea, but it's $300 to $500 mandatory, and 40 hours of community service. Mandatory 40 hours of community service on killing a buck under 150 inches. If you kill a large buck over 150 inches, which happened in Kent County last year, and convicted on a poaching penalty, and poaching is simply killing a deer illegally under our law that we promoted and was passed, killing a deer illegally, if you're convicted of that, then you get the mandatory fine imposed. 150-inch whitetail and larger, $2,000 to $5,000. I'm sorry, $5,000 to $10,000 mandatory. $5,000 is minimum, $10,000 is the maximum, and we want to make sure that the poachers understand that it's going to hit them in the pocketbook, you know, when they're found guilty of poaching. So that's the way it works. Wow, I talked a long time on that segment, didn't I, John?
Yes, you did.
Huh? How about that? Huh? That's all right. That's okay. It's what we do. We're pre-recording. We're keeping an eye on the clock because we got to keep into, you know, these certain little breaks that we do and that type of thing. So I've got a few more minutes. We can continue on with that. But, you know, to wrap it all up, Maryland Hunting Coalition is asking for your help to help us continue our mission. And if you read our mission statement, it's pretty simple. And it involves scientific, science-based wildlife management, not wildlife management based on politics. That's what we go for. So we hope you all understand that and be able to give us a helping hand. Anyway, by the way, if you want to call in and get in the muzzleloader contest, you can call Chris. That number's still good. The phone number's still good. 410-922-6680 is our phone number. And we'll be right back after these messages.
WCBM, Baltimore.
Dry weather and unseasonably mild temperatures all the way into Monday. Cold front bringing rain Tuesday with significantly cooler temperatures for the middle of the week. Mostly sunny skies today. We're into the mid-70s this afternoon. Partly cloudy tonight near 50. Mix of clouds and sun and unseasonably mild again tomorrow, mid-70s. Increasing clouds Monday, mid-70s. And then rain and around 70 Tuesday. Partly cloudy, cooler, lower 60s Wednesday. I'm meteorologist Ken Boone from the Weather Channel for Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Crab and seafood lovers, are you ready for some good times? The Spurry family has been in the seafood business on the Eastern Shore for over 35 years, specializing in local Maryland crabs and oysters, and they own the famous Chesapeake Landing Restaurant in St. Michael's. They're now bringing the best of the Eastern Shore across the bridge to Baltimore. Good Times Crab House. Located at 8001 Liberty Road, just 1 minute off Beltway Exit 18, headed west, is now open to serve you the freshest Maryland crabs, local oysters, fresh-picked crab meat, Gulf shrimp, a variety of fresh fish, and Alaskan snow crab legs. And Good Times Crab House and Crab Feast Catering specializes in on-site crab feast catering for your large events. Look for Good Times on Facebook for daily specials and weekend deals. Call 443-657-7187, For good times and good crabs and seafood, it's Good Times Crab House. Call 443-657-7187. This is Alan Ellis for Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex spray-on bedliners. Linex spray-on bedliners are rated number one and carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, crabbing, and hunting gear can't hurt it. Choose the Linex Premium or the Linex Extra. Both look great. Bay Linex and Catonsville Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, you get it. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex bedliner and truck gear accessories. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie, 410-789-0199. 410-789-0199. Catonsville Linex. New location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill, just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford. 410-455-0800. 410-455-0800. Linex.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410,
W&W
Tire and Auto.
Talk Radio 680, WCPM.
How high is the water, Mama? 2 feet high and rising. How high is the water, Papa? She said it's 2 feet high and rising. Well, we can make it to the road in a homemade boat, cause that's the only thing we got left that'll float. It's already over all the wheat and oats. 2 feet high and rising.
Okay, we're back. We're back with George Timko, who's the Assistant Deer Project Leader for Maryland Department of Natural Resources, Wildlife, and Heritage Service. Is all that on your business card, George?
Yeah, he fits on there, believe it or not.
Really? That's amazing. Gotcha. George is, and I have been associated for a long time, and George has written some articles on deer diseases for the Maryland Hunting Quarterly. And, of course, what the number one topic of concern is right now in the deer hunting world is this thing called HD or EHD. And there's more than one HD, more than one EHD, and George is going to explain that. What's happening with our deer, George, when you get a phone call and somebody says, I just found 7 dead deer on my property. I just found 12 dead deer on my property. Tell me what's going on.
Well, I mean, the first thing that we suspect, if it's late summer, early fall, and the deer are in or around water, we suspect hemorrhagic disease. It's a viral disease that kills deer. It's spread by an insect. Quite frankly, the virus causes the animal to have a fever, become dehydrated, and that's why they flock to water, which further exacerbates things because the midges' habitat is mudflats, obviously, which is around water. So
right. You
get a concentration of deer near water because of the drought conditions. You get the insects coming into more contact with deer, and then, bang, you get the virus that can either sicken, weaken, or kill those deer.
Right. You know, all of us have experienced walking through a cloud of gnats, you know.
Sure.
And we just get in your eyes and, you know, you just nose and you just swat them away and you don't think anything of it. But those little buggers are bloodsuckers, just like mosquitoes, are they not?
They exactly are. And they're called the Culicoides species of midge. It's really basically the no-see-ums, the sand gnats, those little biting insects that, quite frankly, are extremely annoying to us, can be deadly to white-tailed deer.
Yes, biting us, deadly to deer.
Right.
Okay.
No impact on humans, by the way.
No, exactly. Not like a mosquito that the Zika, non-existent Zika virus. Where did that go, by the way?
No idea.
Last year, everybody was afraid of mosquitoes, and this year, not a word about it.
Not a peep. Yep.
No, just kind of like fisteria. So, anyway, okay, so the gnat bites a deer, and as it's sucking the blood, it's injecting this virus into the deer's bloodstream, correct?
Sure.
Okay, so the virus gets injected, and what happens from there? I mean, and how long does it take for this fever, this viral infection to start?
Well, Well, I mean, it's almost immediately with some deer. I mean, quite frankly, in some situations, in the acute and paracute stages of the disease, it can happen within days to weeks that animal can get sick and or die.
Okay.
But there's also a chronic stage of that disease that some animals have more of an immune system response to it, and some of those deer can live for a longer period of time, weeks to months, and or some of them beat it completely and survive the disease, so they pass on that immunity to their offspring.
Okay.
At least maternally they do.
Okay.
So the animal gets bitten by the insect. The insect imparts the virus. The virus gets into the animal's body. It causes fever, dehydration, and the animals go towards water. Of course, when they're down near water, they encounter more of the midges because that's the midges' habitat, mud flats in and around water.
Yeah.
So they possibly get bitten multiple times. Then that animal, of course, is getting water to try to belay the problem associated with the fever from fighting the virus, and then it can go downhill from there.
It's almost a vicious circle, isn't it?
Pretty much, yes. And we see more of this occurring in those areas where we have more of the, quote, midge habitat, that area where there's more mudflats. So what you would think is that the eastern shore and southern Maryland, in those areas where there's a lot more tidal flow and a lot more water habitat, would have more of these cases, and that's what we found. And there's less so in the western parts of the state, just because simply there's less mud flat, that type of midge habitat in that part.
Right, so basically bayshore areas where you're going to find a lot of this stuff.
The
tidal influence is more so than anything, I guess.
Yes, I believe so. And then the midge itself is actually it's actually immune to salt. Like a lot of insects really can't tolerate salt, but the midges can tolerate quite a bit of salt.
So, okay.
They really kind of have the area to themselves whenever it comes to that environment.
Okay.
Now, it's not to say that hemorrhagic disease can't be found in other areas of the state. We actually have found it as far west as Garrett County.
Right.
And this year alone in Washington County, they were some of the first reports in May, June, July.
Okay.
So July, and then, you know, it's been actually this year in particular across 12 different counties of the state. So far reported 149, roughly 150 dead deer, but that's just what's been reported to me directly through staff and or through landowners. So there could be more out there, and we're certain that there are.
Okay. No doubt. We've had a caller here a couple of weeks ago that talked about deer in Talbot County, and that seems to be like the epicenter of it this year.
Sure does.
We had, I remember, probably 10 years ago, maybe a little longer, up around Chestertown seemed to be the hot area. If you remember that, you know, dead deer floating in the Chester River and all that.
Sure thing, yeah.
You know, you were here then, and that was one of the biggest outbreaks that we had was 10 years ago in 2007, correct?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's cyclical. I mean, periodically, I mean, it seems to be 3 to 5 years that there's like a small outbreak here and there. But about 10 years now?
About 10 years,
it seems like there's a big outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all relative. I mean, you put it in perspective with the numbers of deer that die. It's a big deal to a local population of deer, but in the overall scale of things and the deer population as a whole, it truly doesn't present a huge decline or threat to the deer population. Simply because it happens, and then the deer population rebounds or recovers.
Right. Well, you know, you find 30 to 40 dead deer on his property. I mean, his
pretty concerning.
his area is is knocked pretty hard.
Sure.
But if you know, deer nature hates a vacuum, abhors a vacuum, I think is the quote, which simply means if you got deer that are taken out of that particular habitat, and you still have that habitat there available with the water and the food sources and the bedding areas, more deer are going to filter into that area.
Exactly. Basic wildlife management, sure.
Sure, yeah, I get that. But, you know, in certain areas, in certain hot spots, this can knock down the population for, you know, till 2-3 years, I would suspect, until that
population recovers.
Population
right.
recovers. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the simple math is one buck plus one doe equals four deer,
right.
You know, every year. And so it goes from there. But what about Sika deer?
Sika deer appear to be immune to it. We've not found any Sika deer to date that have had it. Now, Sika deer is not to say that they're immune to everything, but to our knowledge, Sika deer don't get this disease.
Hmm. The reason I ask is because I have a friend who lives in Dorchester and found dead deer on his property with no, you know, bullet wounds or anything else. Didn't appear to be roadkill. No, you know, apparent reason for death.
Sure.
And I said, you got to call that in. And
right.
He probably did not.
He did not. Not to our knowledge.
Right.
It's possible. I mean, we're not saying it's not possible, but we haven't found, to my knowledge, there's never been a Sika deer, at least in Maryland, that's been typed for the disease or strained for the disease.
And maybe because of their very habitat that it's, you know,
very well
you're not going to find it, you know.
You're right.
You know, you're not going to go in waders and take one out of the marsh somewhere, you know. So.
Yeah, and by nature, this disease occurs in the summertime and early fall, and it's very difficult to get a hold of a fresh carcass. By the time they're usually found, they're often skin and bones or they're completely decayed. Because it's hot, it's in the middle of summertime,
sure.
And they're out in the habitat where, as you mentioned, sometimes can be difficult to get to.
Right.
And that's what makes it difficult for our staff to get a hold of samples. We'll get a call from Leonard saying, I've got a dead deer in my pond. I've got two dead deer hanging around my pond right now.
Right.
What do we do? And then the staff get out there, and what you ask the guy before you go, is this a fresh enough sample that we could take a sample? Sure it is. You get out there, and it's basically putrid. So
it's
all relative, but the fact is, to get a fresh sample, you have to get it pretty quick, and that virus has to be alive in the tissues in order to figure out what strain or type it is. So
right. That
makes it very difficult. So normally what happens is what we get is reports of unexplained high mortality during the summer, early fall, and that's just dead deer reported by landowners or hunters.
Right, and we don't know what happens. Okay.
Right.
So, verified EHD reports that you have so far this year, what's the number?
I am personally up to 149 dead animals that were reported to me, either through staff or directly from landowners across 12 different Maryland counties. That was starting in June, July, and then up most recently here in October. So, two of those, we actually had samples from several different counties submitted to the lab. A couple of those samples were fresh enough to actually isolate a virus from, and one was in Dorchester County EHD6 and then Talbot County EHD2 and then Frederick County, and they hadn't determined a strain for that particular virus yet. So regardless, it's hemorrhagic disease.
But it's important. It's important to know because there are other deer diseases out there that can affect these animals.
Exactly.
Not just EHD, and you want to know, you know, as early as possible if you can find the correct carcasses, the correct samples to get it. So what's the difference between the strains of EHD? You say there's EHD2 and EHD6. There must be, 1 through 5 also.
Well, in Maryland, we've only found 1, 2, and 6.
Okay.
So there may be other strains, but quite frankly, 1, 2, and 6. I really honestly don't understand their numbering system. It goes from 1 to 2 to 6. So,
right.
How they type it, I'm not exactly sure, but, you know, the pathologists have their way of doing things.
And, well, I mean, when you see, like, these avian flus and swine flus and things like that, it's always H1, N1, and you know, H2, N11, there's an H and an N in there, and I don't know how that, you know, it's the whatever makes up that particular virus, the protons, neutrons, or God knows what trons, but they're, you know, it's something that's that they can determine the strain of whatever virus it might be.
Right.
So perhaps that's where we are with these numbers as well. That'd be something for me to dig into and understand a little better. But you're the guy here in Maryland, so I know you guys put out a press release a while back, maybe a month ago, on watching for EHD.
Right.
And that type of thing. You know, we talked about it here on the air. We're probably the only outlet here that talks at length about these kind of things because, you know, we know the hunters are going out there. They're going out there today, muzzleloader season. And, you know, if they find a dead deer or several dead deer, you know, maybe you're tracking one and you run across a couple carcasses down by the creek or at the edge of the marsh or something like that, you should probably report it.
Sure thing. And we encourage hunters to do that, hunters, landowners, farmers, you know, the people who are most likely to experience these things, to give us a call.
How do they do that?
Well, I'll give you the phone number here.
Go ahead.
Matter of fact, it's in front of me, but it's in a presentation, so I'm digging.
Okay, take your time.
Here it is. Well, there's actually a couple different numbers they can call, but the most practical one is going to be our Maryland DNR Wildlife Call Center.
Okay.
Toll-free number 1-877.
Right.
463.
Okay.
6497.
6497. I think that's the one that was in the news release.
It should be. And that's we actually employ Wildlife Services staff to man that phone line for us. And we actually give those folks updates, regular updates when it comes to diseases, and kind of keep them involved as well,
right,
just as we would our staff. So they're pretty well versed on deer diseases in particular, and they know that they're going to get some calls.
Well, they got a good trainer, that's why. That would be you.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
877-463-6497. 877-463-6497. If you find a deer carcass and you want to report it, and you should, even though maybe you find, you know, five or six just carcasses, just skeletons or whatever, and you don't know what caused it, they happen to be near water, probably a good idea to call anyway, because you're trying to get numbers on this thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And one thing we tell the public is, if it's just one dead deer in an area,
yeah,
and there's no other reports of dead deer in that area, it could be anything. I mean, it could have been struck by a car, right? Or if it's just a skeleton, Lord knows, it could have died from whatever. But if there's multiple dead deer found in and around water, those are the ones that we suspect that have had hemorrhagic disease and or died from hemorrhagic disease, particularly if they get a live animal that's sick in or near water, or any live sick deer. We would like to know about it. So if possible, if staff can get a hold of those carcasses, even the better.
Got it. Beautiful. George, I appreciate that, all the information. There are other deer diseases. We only have about 2 minutes here. There are other deer diseases out there. You talked about an emaciated deer in the chronic stages of EHD. People see an emaciated deer and automatically assume it's something worse.
They do. Oftentimes, you know, of course, chronic wasting disease has gotten a lot of attention for obvious reasons. But we've only found chronic wasting disease in the western part of the state. And quite frankly, that's where it's been found in surrounding states as well. So we don't anticipate it going elsewhere, at least rather quickly, but, you know, never know. We want to know if it is a sick deer. We'd like to find out about it. There are also other diseases, of course. Rabies is a disease that all mammals can get, particularly deer, and it can have pretty similar symptoms. So a sick deer is a sick deer is a sick deer. Report it to us.
Right. Report it to you, because it could be anything.
Could be. Exactly right.
Yep. Hey, George, look, I appreciate that. We're running out of time for this hour, and we appreciate you being with us today. You're welcome to stay through the next segment if you want, but if not, we'll say goodbye, and we'll appreciate all the effort and all the work that all the biologists do here in the state of Maryland. You guys work long hours, hard hours, and your main concern is the sustainability of our healthy and robust deer herds here in Maryland, and both whitetails and sitka. So we understand what you guys do. You're really out there, plus the interaction with the public, and then unfortunately you got to deal with the political side of it as well. So, you know, it is what it is, and that's what the coalition, the Maryland Hunting Coalition, understands is that part of it as well. So,
well, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the opportunity to address your viewership, your hunters, and quite frankly, it's just another opportunity to engage the public and for them to engage us, so we appreciate that.
Thanks, George. George Timko, Assistant Deer Project Leader, Maryland Department of Natural Resources, Wildlife and Heritage Service. If you find a dead deer, 877-463-6497. Thank you, George. Have a great weekend.